Blog Talk Radio.
Forbidden archaeology, forgotten history, divination, magic, cryptozoology, UFOs, nature, science, and spirit. All this and more right here on the Main Street Universe Radio Network.
Hello, friends, and welcome to another episode of Main Street Universe, the show reminding you that the mysteries and possibilities of the universe are closer to Main Street than you may have ever imagined. And tonight we'll be discussing the positive, good headlines, good news, good stories from around the world. Anyone can bring you the bad news, but Main Street Universe will do the hard work of bringing you the good news, stories that are interesting, stories that will inspire, hopefully, and stories that range from personal to political. Join us in our circle. Co-creator of the Main Street Universe Radio Network. I founded it originally with my friend Kevin Baird, and I want to remind everyone that Main Street Universe is, in fact, a network of six shows, seven now. Starting with this one, the flagship show, the one that started it all, Main Street Universe, with myself, associate producer Janice R. White, and Brett Hillman. 9 p.m. Eastern Time every Wednesday. On Thursdays, we have Uat Da'u, with our hostess, Queen Mother Imaku, Thursdays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. And then on Fridays, we have Walking on the Sidewalk, The Horizon Oracle's Journey at 9 a.m. in the morning, in the daytime, Mr. Kevin Baird. Kevin can be found at www.templeofgaia.com. And Kevin is an artist, amongst other things. I have some of his art hanging on my wall right now, and he's the creator of the Horizon Oracle Cards, a unique sense of divination tools to be used And he was inspired by this while being a tarot reader, and then came up during meditations with his own cards, the Horizon Oracle. So check him out at www.templeofgaia.com, and be sure to check out his companion set as it is finished. So the Horizon Oracle deck has a new look along with a new book, and that is the Horizon Oracle Companion. It has some interesting card pairings and such. So the explanations are as well accompanied by those when another card is involved. So www.templeofgaia.com. Then on Friday evening, later that night at midnight, we have Jesse Ann Nichols George with Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. Jesse is the author of four books, Activating Compassion, Activating Compassion, the accompanying workbook, as well as You, Me, Life, Dreams, and its accompanying workbook. Jesse's show is at midnight. She's had many amazing guests, including musicians like Steve Halpern and others. And we've had some great musicians on the Main Street Universe Radio Network, including Woven Green, who you just heard, including Diana Arkenstone, and many others, and more to come. So midnight, Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. Then Sundays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, your host is Mr. Darren Boucare, with his show Spiritual Insight. Darren is a reader at Marie Lovell's House of Voodoo in the magical city of New Orleans. 7 p.m. Eastern Time. He will be off this week. I'll be playing a rerun or doing something in its place, but he will be back next following Sunday. 7 p.m. Eastern Time, Mr. Darren Boucare. Then Mondays, we have at 10 p.m. Eastern Time, our new host, Mr. Randy Goldberg, a Vedic astrologer, world-renowned Vedic astrologer, has been on CNN, NPR, and the Washington Post. And Randy's show is called Science of Light, and he does discuss topics other than Vedic astrology, including Jungian studies and concepts and all things metaphysical and esoteric. So join Randy Goldberg for Science of Light. And then on Tuesday evenings at 10 p.m. Eastern Time, we have Miss Susan Weed with her show Green Magic, Green Medicine. Susan is an expert, author, lecturer on herbal medicine, women's health issues, as well as psychology of healing. So those make up for now the shows on the Main Street Universe Radio Network. And I see one of my co-hosts is here, Mr. Brett Hiltman. Welcome, Brett. You're on the
air. Thank you, Daniel. Thank you, Daniel.
And how has your week been?
Cold. Very cold.
I think that's how everybody's playing a little bit internal.
Well,
you know,
I think that's why we need some good news.
Yeah, that's why I picked that topic for tonight, by the way. And
yeah, I mean, here it's been cold. You're about to get hit with some with a nice storm. I mean, I think we're ready for spring.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
Well, what I want to do is straight away start off with our first story. And this one is of an international nature. This is from Reuters. And it's an Israeli singer becomes super popular in Yemen. This is a connection some people aren't aware of necessarily. I'll explain that in a minute. But an Israeli singer has become an unlikely star, some may think, in Yemen, an Arabic country, where his hit songs blare from cafes and taxi cabs. Zion Golan, his parents were born in Yemen. And for those that don't know, there's a lot of history of Israelites going through Yemen, but won't get into that now. But like other Israelis, he is banned from traveling to the conservative Muslim nation, which has no diplomatic ties to the Jewish state. Known in Yemen as Zion Golan, if I'm saying that right, his songs, whose Arabic lyrics are written by his mother-in-law, are distributed and bootlegged as CDs and downloads on the internet. Yemen music is my heart and soul, Golan told Reuters. My big dream is to go to Yemen. My parents told me many stories about Yemen, but Sana'a, about Aden, all about Yemen. So I felt it was right to write, to perform songs in a Yemeni style, which I feel is part of me, unquote. In Sana'a, Wada Othman, a doctor grinned as he displayed an array of Golan songs on his mobile phone. I adore the singer, he says. Abdullah Al-Haj, who owns a video and music shop in Sana'a, said music of Yemeni Jewish singers was in high demand by local youngsters who increasingly are getting music, of course, off the internet, like everywhere else. Golan said he receives no royalties yet for his music in Yemen, where the late Israeli singer Afra Haza, who was also of Yemeni Jewish descent, was once popular as well. Between 1949 and 1959, most of Yemen's 50,000 Jewish population were flown to newly founded Israel in a secret operation dubbed Magic Carpet. Today, fewer than 200 still live in the Arabian Peninsula state. Golan, who learned Yemeni Arabic as a boy, is one of about 140,000 Israelis descended from Yemen's ancient Jewish community, which is a pretty good amount for the small country of Israel. And he said that he was pleased his popularity there provided a bridge between the two people. I enjoy that they are enjoying my songs. It makes me feel good, he said. Quote, I wish there will be peace and then we could connect. That would be the best dream I could have for all of Israel. And thus was the end of that story. And I thought that was a pretty interesting story, that in a very conservative Muslim country, a Israeli singer becomes one of their most popular and most listened to acts in cafes and taxis, as they said, blaring in the streets.
We really don't know what it's like there, but I'm sure that, you know, among some younger generations and stuff, there is the possibility of a more peaceful solution in that region, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's little things like this that will make it possible.
Absolutely. And I wanted to open up, me being a musician and being so passionate about music, I wanted to open up with something relating to music and music connecting different factions, if you will.
I agree.
These things happen.
I do have a story.
And hold on. See, Denise is here. I didn't see her before because I was glancing at the article. Associate producer Denise Carwhite. Welcome, Denise.
Hi, how you doing?
Doing well. And you?
I'm in the car. So.
You're in the car.
Yes. I'm not driving, so David's driving. We just got finished with dinner. We had a movie and a dinner date.
Well,
are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay. Unfortunately, I don't have any of my notes with me, but as soon as I get in the house, I'll call back, okay?
No problem.
All right. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, Brett, go ahead with your story.
This one is one of the ones I found today looking over the Huffington Post, and it's one that really kind of exemplifies the Main Street Universe motto.
Mm.
Gabe Sonnier was an elementary school's janitor for 27 years. Now he's that school's principal.
Mm.
And he did work for 27 years and as the janitor, And in 1985, the principal at the time pulled him aside and said, I'd rather see you grading papers than picking them up. And he went back to school, working for a few hours at the school, then going to school all day, coming back and finishing after closing. And eventually he did become, and he started this at the age of 39, and then he got his degree in 2008, and he got his teaching certificate. And as the years passed, this November, he became the newest principal of the school. So kind of a major jump, and if you you go forward with the things you want to do.
And taking the good advice of people and saying, hey, we think you can do this. You should go back to school and continue your education and come back and be able to do this.
Mm-hmm. And now he's the highest position at the school level anyway. So I don't think his career is done for sure.
No, he could go into some other administrative job. Not administrative, what I mean is school board job or something of that nature. Some sort of maybe even make more money being in part of some of the even federal jobs that are out there for those in the Department of Education and et cetera, et cetera.
And, I'm sure he has he may want to stay there. Love of kids, that may be a job that's the perfect fit for him.
Mm-hmm.
It's really what you want to do in life.
Right, if that's what your passion is. Now, here's one. This one, I guess you could say, is on an environmental frontier. And Vietnam City of Hoi An, to pedal towards eco-city status. The central city of Hoi An will promote the use of bicycles this year as part of a plan to build the city into the first eco-city in Vietnam. Vice chairman of the municipality's People's Committee, Trong Van Be, told Vietnam News that the city has launched a series of programs on environmental protection to be used as tourist attractions. Further, the bicycle has been selected as the favorite vehicle for tourists visiting destinations in the city, suburbs, and beaches. Makes me think, I had some friends in, I think it was Amsterdam, where they do a lot of biking around, and they have those special
mm-hmm.
bikes, those sit-down ones. I don't know if you've seen those things.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was. And to quote, it says, we encourage local people to use more environmentally friendly vehicles, such as bicycles, battery-powered bicycles, and to walk as they carry out their daily activities, if they can, in order to keep the city clean and healthy. The city has gradually limited the use of motorbikes in old quarters prior to banning motorbikes in these areas. Since 2002, the city has successfully operated a pedestrian street in the old quarter hosted by Nature Day for the past 4 years, he says. According to Nguyen Van Hien, head of the city's Natural Resources and Environmental Office, bicycles are now used by most women and children in the city. Now, I do also know that there are some places where, doing this kind of thing and biking around all the time isn't necessarily practical. But there are places where it's almost unpractical to use cars, because if you know how old cities can be, they're so narrow and the streets are so small that the cars can just clog everything up so quickly. Towards the end, it goes on to say, the ancient city has been the first city in Vietnam hosting a car-free day in an effort to make the environment cleaner in the tourist hub. It has also launched an action program to stop using plastic bags and the three R's, of course, reduce, reuse, recycle program. Last year, the UNESCO recognized World Heritage City debuted its solar-powered public lighting system along the city's Hoi River Square. So that's interesting that they've also installed a solar-powered lighting system. So I would say that's a bit of good news as well whenever people are going towards alternative technologies, which in the old days people say, oh, you can never do that, you can never do that. But, of course, you can. And places do. Places use geothermal. Places use wind. And these things are beginning to really progress and come a long way. I've looked into employment with solar places because I've seen some interesting solar companies cropping up around here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I've seen a few more alternative energies kind of popping up and making a real strong stand in the last couple months.
Mm-hmm.
Which is probably not easy, considering the fact not to bring back the weather into this. It's just been strange, you know, for as far as the United States goes. So wind has been pretty strong in a lot of areas, but then again, I'm sure the cold does make some differences. But, you know, we'll see what happens as things warm up and companies can really make a strong stand.
Yeah. And here's another one on the east-west combination front. Now, these things, because I have a passion for alternative medicine, and by that I'm using that term very loosely, because out there for so long you have people that are doubtful of different healing modalities. But here's an interesting article, I thought, about yoga, using Eastern yoga, joins Western medicine to heal breast cancer survivors. And I'm noticing more integration of these things in official medical circles, including Reiki being used in hospitals, including doctors starting to prescribe things like alkaline diets and even prescribing alternative medicine things like colloidal silver for killing an infection, even though there's some still controversy on silver because it's a heavy metal. I've actually used it quite successfully before, but some people warn about not taking too much, but some will say, well, as long as it's separated enough parts per million, you're okay. But anyway, on to this story. Exercise can be difficult enough even for healthy people, but it's even harder for breast cancer survivors, of which I know one, my good friend Mina, who had a double mastectomy, by the way, after surgery and rounds of taxing therapy and all that radiation and all that other stuff. Studies have shown that exercise can buy the health of cancer survivors some more time and help them to heal. The heavy fatigue and the pain after treatment can keep patients from going, you know, on a run or on a bike ride, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a new study published in the January issue of the Journal of Clinical Oncology showing that yoga may be a manageable way for breast cancer survivors to work out and still attain health. To investigate the effects of yoga, breast cancer survivors of all ages gathered twice a week for 3 months to practice hatha yoga. The study conducted, this was at Ohio State University. Researcher Janice Glazier and her team then tracked two important components of diminished health, fatigue and inflammation. Fatigue from cancer treatments hinders daily activity for 1 in 3 breast cancer survivors, and less physically active survivors are at more risk of poor health and an early death. Inflammation also provides an important measure of health because it drives fatigue and is linked to many problems, including cancer, diabetes, heart disease, Alzheimer's. And Glazier's study to date is the largest to evaluate the effect of yoga on inflammation for cancer survivors. Now, when the researchers assessed the participants after 6 weeks of yoga, they found that women participating in yoga had less inflammation and reported lower fatigue than the non-yoga practicing control group. The team reevaluated the women several months after the study ended and discovered that the women who had practiced yoga achieved even greater long-term gains, up to 20% reduced inflammation and fatigue, 57% lower than the control group. So Dr. Glacier has several ideas why yoga might restore health. Breast cancer survivors often have disrupted sleep, which drives fatigue and inflammation, and the women who practice yoga slept significantly better. And though it doesn't look tiring, I've tried it before, and it is quite exhausting. You're like, oh, they're just stretching, but it's actually a very exhausting practice. The deep breathing and meditative aspects of yoga can reduce stress, and this may also lessen inflammation and fatigue. A group activity like yoga also gives survivors additional social support, and this can as well, some say, boost the healing process. Although the study saw no remarkable difference in mood and loneliness between those who did and didn't practice yoga, so some of that was subject. But the research has shown that many forms of exercise provide similar benefits, but yoga may be more practical way for women to rebuild their health after a breast cancer surgery. With yoga, breast cancer survivors can tailor its practice to their own fitness level and adapt postures to accommodate physical patients. Yoga may offer one more advantage over the other exercises. Many studies have concluded that people need to lose weight in addition to exercising to reduce inflammation. This may not apply to yoga, but, quote, when I saw that, I thought, oh, boy, we're cooked, unquote, because we didn't have a lightweight group, and the women in our study didn't lose the weight, Dr. Glazer says. Yet we did see changes in the inflammation, she's still being quoted here, that suggests that there may be something particularly beneficial about yoga. So that was reducing fatigue, which is really big after, you know, all the treatments and the chemo and all that, and reducing inflammation seem to be the two things that were really going on here from this yoga practice. So I found that to be interesting. And this continues to happen, this incorporating in very real-world studies, not just people going, oh, it's just fluffy new age, blah, 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 but in very real-world ways, incorporating these Eastern practices and some of these practices from ancient, you know, enlightened mystics and masters and all this, and in a very scientific way studying them. And like I said, it's happening more and more. You see, like, Reiki and Hockey.
And some of them are so far removed from any of their religious practices anymore when done in, like, an exercise-type context.
Mm-hmm. That's right. It doesn't.
And I think, yeah, I was gonna say it's more an exercise now, and we're seeing the benefits of the exercise. And I wanted to say this is a great segue into my next story. We have to have at least one from the major event that's going on right now, the Olympics. Yep. A Russian cross-country skier crashed today, you know, in the middle of his race, and his ski was broken. And he, Garavov was his name, and he was about to throw in the towel when Canadian coach ran over and fitted a new ski onto his boot and let him at least cross the finish line. He said he wanted him to cross the finish line with dignity. Now, a lot of the reports are saying this could be a way of kind of paying it forward, because back in the 2006 games, a Canadian Olympian snapped a pull on her way to finish of a race, and also by a rival country's coach came and helped the same way from Norway. Mm. So, you know, you do good things, move forward, and give good things unto others.
Absolutely. And another interesting piece of good news for people that I personally know And this is from, if anybody remembers, oh gosh, what's it been, almost 7 or 8 months ago or a year, where we interviewed Brett, the guys who invented the Garden Tower. Remember when we did that?
Yes.
The Garden Tower is an indoor or outdoor contained gardening system that is only about 4 feet wide. It's stacked up tall, though. It's about 5 feet tall or so, and it can grow 50 plants. You basically pour in the dirt into this thing, and then you pour into the tube kitchen scrap for compost, and then you drop in the worms. They eat it, and they make the soil into beautiful, perfect compost soil, and the plants are always near the good soil. You water it every now and again. The water can actually recycle. Like, it goes through, collects the nutrients, falls into the bottom attachment bucket that they have, and you take it and you dump it all back in again. So the nutrients doesn't get lost. So it's like a nutrient-rich soil internal gardening program, basically. And it can help to actually solve problems being in an area where you don't have good soil. You don't even have to import good soil. You just compost it, add the worms, and they'll make it into good soil. And now some would still be better than others, of course. But what I mean is it could be in that place where people don't grow so well, put like 1,000 of these things in, and you have a whole lot of food for a small village or something like that, which is one of their goals is to get to that point. But the good news about it, after being on Main Street Universe, they were featured on PBS Public Television on a show called Startups. And they did a mini feature on them as part of that show and gave them very high reviews. It was a very positive review of their product and what its potential is. And everybody keeps saying the same thing. They can't believe how well it works.
You know, we get another, you heard it here first. We're one of the big stories I remember, we were talking about the bats. And then I was driving and listening to NPR, and they did a very similar story a couple of months after our show. And it's just, it's kind of interesting to hear where people go after being on our little online broadcast.
That's right. In the Garden Tower, I predict much success to them, and including when I get my new website up for all things Daniel Michael, basically my music and everything else and my book I'm working on. I'm going to include a link to that. I'm becoming a sales affiliate for them because I really believe in their project. I mean, I'm not getting a dime from them right now, folks. Trust me. but in the future, I want to work with them as an affiliate because I believe in their product. So I think it'll be a nice relationship, and it's good to see them get that notoriety. Startups is a great show, by the way, and fits right into our topic tonight. It's all about local people, well, in whatever the area is, not just local, but it's all about people that start up their own business, just as the title would suggest, and they become very successful at it. There's a, you know, Detroit, there was a store in Detroit, by the way, you might be familiar with it, Brett. It was called, I think it was called Mercantile Detroit or something like that. Was one of
I am not familiar with it.
It's a little bit off of the Eastern Market area. It's a little off the path.
I'm familiar with the area, yes.
Yeah, it's a little off the Eastern Market area, but it's a store that's doing pretty well, at least when the show was aired. And it's very unique in the use of all Detroit artists and local Detroit vendors and craftsmen for all their products. So, pretty cool idea.
That's wonderful, especially now with, again, you know, Detroit, all we're hearing is bad news here because, well, Detroit. So
exactly.
Hearing some good news about Detroit is very much welcome.
In the store, Mercantile Detroit, it's also very Detroit-themed. So it's not just what they make. It's that it's very themed on Detroit-based stuff. That's what they said. They said, when you walk into this place, I want you to know you're not anywhere else but Detroit. You know, that's the feeling the owner wanted, you know. So anyway, we're at the half hour here, and I'm going to go ahead and take a brief song break, Brett.
Sorry?
And then we will return. This is actually one of mine. I haven't played it in a while. I want to remind everybody that I'm working on an album that's going to be released in June. speaking of good news, we're finally getting a lot of progress on this. And the album is going to be called Songs of the New Old Ways. This is an acoustic version of the song. It will sound different on the album. This is a version that I did before I had the band, and now I have a full band. So, but this song is called The Lake, and we'll be back.
Just floated away. I touched the sun, but I can't reach it. My vision was taken away. I fear I'll sink. And the song unaware of his pain. When he returns, he will be happy. His thoughts will be with him again. And sometimes he fears he'll sink. And the song he hears makes him
I am one with the spirit, Ashe, Ashe, and that was made by my very good friend, Queen Mother Amaku. That's her song, and I love it very dearly. And tonight, it's Thursday night, 7:03, time for World Reggae Party. And, ha-ha, it's my first year at World Reggae Party from 10/11/2011 to 10/11.
Forbidden archaeology, forgotten history, divination, magic, cryptozoology, UFOs, nature, science, and spirit. All this and more right here on the Main Street Universe Radio Network.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back. We are playing a little bit of a song that's going to be on my new album. The song was called The Lake. It'll sound a little different on the album. And then, of course, we drifted partway through the song to a little bit of World Reggae Party from her one-year anniversary. Our associate producer, Miss Janice R. White. And I want to quickly remind everyone that Main Street Universe is a network of seven shows. The one you're listening to now, Main Street Universe, myself, AP Janice R. White, and host Brett Hillman, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And then Thursdays, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, daytime. Queen Mother Imaku with Watau, Fridays, Activating Compassion, The Midnight Hour with Jesse and Nicholas George, Sundays, Darren Bouquer, Spiritual Insight, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. He's a reader at Maori Lavo's House of Voodoo in the magical city of New Orleans. And then Monday, we have Randy Goldberg with his show Science of Light, our Vedic astrologer. And then Tuesdays, 10 p.m. Eastern Time, Susan Weed. And for Now Fridays, 9 a.m. in the daytime, Kevin Baird. And Kevin can be found at www.templeofgaia.com. Feel free to visit his website and to purchase his new companion set, his Horizon Oracle deck, and the accompanying book, which even puts pairs of cards together and explains a suggestion of perhaps how to read them. As he is the primary student, I'm the secondary, and you can be the third dairy, haha, bada-bing, whatever they call that. And now I'm going to bring on Mr. Brett Hillman. Welcome back, Brett.
Thank you. Glad to be back.
Associate producer, Janice R. White. Welcome, Janice.
Ah, okay. I was hearing my world reggae party. You got slightly confused.
Yeah, it was here, remember, because it was still stored here from when we did the one-year anniversary, and we played it on the air one time, remember?
Yes.
So we have
I love hearing it.
Back then.
But yes, I do remember. I was just, when I dialed in, that's the first thing I heard.
Back then, it didn't. There was no issue on uploading it, and then I've had issues uploading recently. So I don't know what's going on, but anyhow,
we still hope to upload it soon. At least have a couple copies on hold.
Yeah, we'll work it out. We'll figure out what's going on. Even Mary had some issues uploading Telepathic TV, and she's been a tech before. She knows technology. Mm-hmm. She used to be tech support. And she's like, I don't know what's going on with BTR. But anyhow, now Janice, do you have brought with you a positive news story of your own?
Well, yes. Last night I was looking at TV, and there was a story that came up on one of the news programs I was on TV yesterday, and it's about these two Korean girls, 26 years old, twins. One lives in London. The other one lives in California, but she used to live in New Jersey. And they found out that they are identical twins. And what had happened, well, they had found out that they were twins on Facebook. And it's a wonderful story. They're both Korean. They were from, looks like, Baesin, South Korea. And they were adopted by different families. Anise grew up in Paris, France, where her sister Samantha grew up in New Jersey. And they had very different lives. Anise is a fashion designer, while as Samantha is an actress who was in the film 21 and Older, which I don't know if you ever heard of that, but I haven't. But anyway, it was Samantha that had posted her picture in Facebook, and her twin sister Anise was told by some of her friends that, well, there's this girl on Facebook that looks just like you, and why don't you see what the story is about it. So she got in touch with Samantha, and they said, my friend said that we look alike, so they were looking at the pictures, and I'm looking at the pictures, actually, and they do look very much alike. And like I said, have very different worlds. But it was Samantha that had decided that she wanted to meet her. So they went to London to meet each other. And they had met each other, and they're trying to get also close to who they are as twin sisters. Because they went and said that they like the same type of food. They have the same pet peeve as having the shower curtain on the shower touch their skin. They have the same laugh and the same smile. And I guess they decided last year. I'm trying to figure out the date that they actually saw each other. But they saw each other through Facebook and Kickstarter, which is also like a friend of ours, or maybe a friend of ours, to help them raise money so they can, so Samantha can go to London to meet her sister. And I think the story is very cool. And you hear about people meeting people on Facebook all the time, but sometimes it doesn't really end up being a happy ever after type of thing. But the sisters have definitely kept in touch, and Facebook itself is celebrating this as well, because they're saying that Anise is going to L.A. to meet Sam or Samantha.
Ah.
And they have very similar hobbies, too. They both like yoga. They both like eating and cooking and movies. Like I said, I thought it was a very interesting thing. They have everything they have in common now through this Facebook page of theirs.
Yeah, I think there are some I think there are some things that are genetic and born in, and then there's definitely behaviors that are learned. But some of the things you might just naturally like your food and certain things physically that you like how they feel or don't, like I'm thinking of the shower thing even, some of those things can be, and your features, of course, all those things can be genetic. But it is interesting. In twins, they talk about the twin connection even more so than other relatives, those things of this really almost like a psychic bond across many borders and many countries that twins can still have. So it's always an interesting study is twins. And a great story.
Oh, yes. It's even a picture on the Facebook page where Anise goes to New Jersey to meet Samantha's parents and brother. And it seems to be this guy looks exactly like Mark Zuckerberg in here. So... But like I said, I thought it was a cool story because it's nothing that you actually see every day.
Mm-mm. And that is a good story.
Yeah.
For my next story, I'm going to pull it back in a slightly different direction. And that will be, we've talked on the show about, and Janice remembers this, I think it was one of your first shows where you were with us on Main Street Universe. And that was when we had our interview with Gunter Hauk, the beekeeper, talking about the disappearing.
Yes, I remember that interview.
And one of my favorite episodes of Main Street Universe. I wish I was a little smoother on the intro of that one. But that was an early interview for me. It was only like my second or so, maybe third interview. But speaking of that issue, and speaking of the disappearing honeybee population, here's a more of a simplistic answer as good news, because it sounds so hopeless when you dig into this issue. Here's why. They say, well, the pesticides, you got to increase the pesticides because the mites are coming, but then the mites build up immunity to the pesticides, and then they make larger honeycombs. So now the mites have more time to grow and to grow stronger immune systems, even though the bees aren't, because they're not being fed properly. So now they got bees got weak immune systems, they got pesticides killing them, they got the mites killing them. The fact that they're just not being fed well in general is killing them. It's sugar water or Monsanto-inspired corn syrup instead of the honey they're supposed to eat. So it can seem like an issue. More deadly chemicals are being created every year to destroy the mites, which also in turn isn't good for the bees, da-da-da-da-da, and it seems like a hopeless, ridiculous thing. So a common person goes, well, gosh, what can I do to help? Well, there is one simple thing that people can do to contribute to helping increasing the and supplying and making a healthier honeybee population, without which so much of our food cannot be pollinated.
Mm-hmm.
So here's an article I found from a honeybee conservatory, and the answer really is, in part, people taking a different view of what their lawn is. This could actually be huge if it catches on big. So more and more gardeners are anxious to do their part to help the bees by adding to the shrinking inventory of flower-rich habitat. The thing is, what's happening is with monoculture, you have a huge tracts of land with basically one thing growing, and that is not good for bees. So in the areas, like say you live in a suburban area or a country area or a city area, the recommendation is rethink your lawn. The bees will pollinate the flowers. You'll attract them, providing a bountiful harvest of fruits and seeds and vegetables for everyone. And again, rethinking the lawn. Replace a large part of your lawn, if your neighbors let you, I guess, now with all these organizations and everything, with plants that are flowers instead of grass. For one thing, there's an advantage. You don't got to go out and mow all of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it provides food and habitat for the bees and other wildlife. And the thing is this is a very simple answer that if it caught on, that it really could be a tremendous help. It means you wouldn't have to become a beekeeper yourself. Like, to be practical, most people aren't going to take it into themselves to start a series of beehives. But one thing that they can do for the bee population is to start rethinking their lawn, including planting native flowers. The native flowers help feed the bees and are uniquely adapted to your region. Try to use native flowers to which local bees are especially adapted. You know, do a little research on that. You can visit a website of regional botanical gardening sites, plant nurseries for information. And I'm getting some of this information right now for those of you that want to know. It's the honeybeeconservancy.org is where I'm getting this particular information. Another hint it says is plan for bloom season. Plant at least three different types of flowers, meaning you'll sort of have different bloom times, to ensure blooms through as many seasons as possible, thus providing bees with a constant source. For example, crocus, hyacinth, borage, calendula, and wild lilac provide enticing spring blooms. For the summer, it's recommended bee balm, cosmos, echinacea, snapdragons, foxglove, and hosta. For the autumn time, they recommend zinnias, serum, asters, witch hazel, and goldenrod, which are later bloomers for the autumn. It also says building homes for native bees. Leave a patch of the garden in a sunny spot cultivated for native bees that burrow. Some native bees also need access to soil surface for nesting, for wood and stem nesting babies. This means piles of branches, bamboo, sections, hollow reeds, nesting blocks, and et cetera, et cetera. So it's like leaving these little spaces as well. There's even one that says create a bee bath. Bees need a place to get fresh, clean water. Fill a shallow container of water with pebbles or twigs for the bees to land on while drinking. So having something for them to actually come down and land on as they drink it. Make sure to maintain the container full of fresh water to ensure that they know they can return to the same spot every day. So there's a few hints. Rethinking the lawn, planting flowers, and literally, instead of the lawn being the bourgeois, you know, grass-cutting thing, it can be something more functional for all of us, as it can help to promote these animals that live with us, that pollinate everything, whose populations are needed and are in high demand. People pay real money to import bees because their populations die. So planting flowers, and there was one lady we were talking to, and she's like, her whole yard is flowers.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see how that goes.
She probably has a pretty yard.
Oh, yeah. But we have about 6 minutes left, Janice and Brett.
Okay.
Any final words?
Did she say something?
Any final words?
Oh, what I wanted to say is USA had a good article about Chicago anti-gangs. Has a organization that is taming the street violence in Chicago, which is a very good thing. Chicago is one of my favorite cities, and big cities like Chicago usually gets a really big rap about being very violent. So this is good news.
Now, we do have some extended time here if you want to go on about it a little further.
Okay. Well, they were saying that the crime in Chicago last year, which is 2013, has dropped to a lower level that they haven't seen since 1972. And the amount of shooting victims that are under 18 has dropped 40% in the last 12 months.
That's good.
Yeah.
Another.
If we could do something with, let's say, Baltimore, something similar, that would be a really great thing.
And, you know, Baltimore goes up and down there. Baltimore was starting to show some hope for a while, and then all of a sudden the year after it was worse. And, of course, in my opinion, it's only going to get better when we finally end the war on drugs, but not really trying to go into a political show right now.
Oh, no, that wasn't my lean either. And also, I think if when you start giving youth something to do, I know the war on drugs is pretty big, and we're not going to do a war on drugs show, but I also feel that a lot of these teenagers are bored, and they need to have something to do. I mean, like you just said, Baltimore is a city that has a lot of reflux when it comes to that. You know, it was starting to get good, but now I see through reading the paper, the Baltimore paper, as well as some people that live in Baltimore that are on Facebook, saying it's starting to go back again.
Yeah, I've heard similar things. And you're right. Activities means a lot, and especially if they're living in that environment where there's a lot of the temptation of, you know, you have an underground economy like you had with alcohol prohibition. So there's all those temptations. And the good news about alcohol prohibition was that it didn't work.
Yeah.
And we got rid of it, and we need to do the same thing with the drug prohibition. But outside of that, that's not the only answer, like you said. That's not the only thing. That's a social political thing. On another level, living in what we're living in now, people need inspiration and activities. They need mentors.
Right.
They need. It's just how it is. I mean, I had mentors when I was a teenager. I mean, I went and I took Kung Fu, and I learned from this guy, and I learned the discipline. I learned a different way of thinking. I learned about meditation, as well as learning martial arts, you know, and having those kinds of, I'm not saying that one only, but I'm just saying having those kinds of positive activities are crucial for, I would just say especially sometimes young men and women, but you know how young men can get involved in the violence so much, that it's to find a way to focus that energy into something positive, all that crazy energy being a young person, instead of it being in that negative expression that so often ends up happening.
Yes, I see.
Reverend Don Robertson in D.C. with Beacon House does a pretty good job with that. You know, he takes in young people, which is another great good news story. And they ended up a charity group with a champion football team competing against other schools. And his was like a charity school, an after-school school. And the Beacon House Falcons, you can look that one up. And he's done a great job. And he always encourages people. He always says, come on down, and you'll see how good these kids are doing. And it's also very academic. It is not all about football with Reverend Don. He's very much very much about making sure they do their assignments and their homework and all that, or they don't play. So, anyhow, we're kind of coming down to it. I want to thank you both for joining me.
Thank Sorry you. I was late.
It's okay. It happens.
But, you know, I didn't want him to be driving in the snow because it's snowing now. It's But it's still, it's kind of fine, but it's sticking. And, you know, I kind of want him to be awake and alert and all that wonderful stuff.
Yeah. Thank you for joining us, and thanks for your stories.
Yes.
And Brett Hillman, thank you for joining us.
Of course.
Thank you, Brett.
And
I will see you all in 2 weeks. So,
are you taking off next week too, Janice?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm going to be all by myself here.
Well, it might change if David doesn't get the week off, but
I'm fine.
It's still going to be 2 weeks, regardless of whatever the date would be. Because it's supposed to be my birthday present, so.
Ah, okay. I get it.
Yeah.
Well, everybody, you've been listening to Main Street Universe, the show reminding you that the mysteries and possibilities of the universe are close to Main Street than you may have ever imagined.
And I can imagine a lot.
Absolutely. And remember that you
are. That's right. Good night.
Good night. And remember that there is some good news out there left still in the world. Depends on where you look. Thank you all and have a great evening.